Accession number 27060, reel 10.
In relation to heading off, was there thought of your job at the time in relation to what the Americans were planning?
Yeah, well, I think we thought we knew that the Americans would be taking off, and we were doing the plugging the hull sort of thing.
How did that feel?
It didn't feel too good actually, because we thought that we understood that the Americans wanted the credit for anything that was going to happen, and they didn't want anybody else sharing it, you know. And I don't think the Americans wanted anybody else to have any say in what went on, or where they attacked, or who they attacked, or didn't want Blamey or anybody like that to be given directions that might affect their troops. So they done what they done and pushed on, and we more or less went into a secondary role in containing and mopping up, you know.
How was MacArthur seen at this time?
I don't think Australian troops were too wrapped in MacArthur. He was an arrogant sort of person. And on top of that, we didn't have close enough contact. We only heard secondary things about him and that sort of thing. So I suppose you're not entitled to make a judgment. But apparently that he got into trouble with his own people in the long run anyway. You know, so... Yeah, but he was a very arrogant man, apparently. What he said was it, and that was... He wouldn't brook any question whatsoever. Well, he's a head soldier, so I suppose he's entitled to that because he takes the responsibility of the whole business. But the Yanks... I think the Yanks lose a lot of men that were unnecessary because they plan their strategies like they plan a business. You know, X amount of money to be laid out to do so-and-so, and you'll lose this and you'll lose that, but you'll gain so-and-so, and they balance it all up. And if you've got to lose 2,000 men to do what you've got to do, that's okay. If you lose two at 2,500, it's not good. You know, that's their methods are very much business-like, rather than our method, or the British method, was to probe, find out what was there. If you couldn't hit it head-on, you went around it, pull back, go around the other way, and finally subdue it, you know, nibble away at it rather than confrontation.
So let's talk about the preparation to leave. What was that like?
To leave?
The preparation to actually leave, the time that you were to leave.
Leave where?
Australia, to get to...
New Guinea.
Well,
it gets extremely busy. Like, the camp's got to be closed down because it wasn't... just all our gear went, you know. What we didn't was taken away to storage. All our gear went into kit stores and making sure that everything was up to scratch as far as provisions and requirements were concerned. Everything was checked off and double-checked and then packed up and down from... we were at a place called One Deckler up on the Herbert and Tablelands, and we embussed and went down to Cairns, and we got on the Katoomba and off to New Guinea, and which was the whole trip on the Katoomba to New Guinea was uneventful.
What does it feel like now to be heading off to war again, but you were leaving a wife behind at this point?
Yeah,
How does that make your departure?
I suppose it makes a bit difference, but you're still a soldier. It doesn't matter what, you know, your circumstances. Those circumstances have got to be put in the background because you're a soldier, and that's what you're there for, you know. And I think that most women are good at understanding that too. I really do, you know, and there's nothing worse, I know, than, especially when there's children involved, that soldier doesn't come back. It's devastating for the people that he leaves behind, because everything's got to start anew, and it does. Sometimes it doesn't happen that way. Yeah. And, most of the soldiers that were in the soldiers that were in the last war were just ordinary people, and things weren't all afire in Australia as far as jobs and that were concerned. You know, and it was coming back to make a new life. And as I said, I was lucky. The company that I worked for, I went straight back to them, and although it wasn't very little, they made my pay up while I was in the army, which didn't amount to very much, but enough to get me started when I come out of the army, you know. But the incident with the Japanese brutality, you know, I was just reading a bit of it in that book there. A patrol, this patrol, an FO, a forward observation post, was going up into the, and they had signallers with them and four gun position officers, forward observation officers, assistants and all that sort of thing, and they'd laid their cable from the battery to the FOO, and then they got attacked, and this fellow, Boxhead Bendon, his name was, he got killed, and they had to withdraw without bringing his body back. So the next day they sent, or hours later, they sent a patrol out, and they run into these Japs, and they killed them, and they had Boxhead Bendon in their haversacks. They'd cut him up, all the choices, bits, and they had him taken him back to camp. You know, they'd stripped all his buttocks and the backs of his legs and that sort of thing, and of course they were dead. But it just shows the desperation, you know. They were completely, we'd cut them off, and I think they had gardening units with them that used to immediately, when they got into an area, they'd plant yams and that, corn and that sort of thing, and the sea, they used to fish. But when we cut them off from the sea, there's not much running around New Guinea that you can feed an army on, you know. I know two or three prisoners we got, or one fellow particularly, they attacked the gun position and they were killed, and they had a pouch on them, and Jesus, the stuff that was in this pouch, they had some green leaves, I suppose the natives have told them that they could eat them, but the stuff that was in there, that it just stunk to high heaven, and apparently they were putting this on these leaves and eating it, you know. It makes you feel sorry sometimes, but what can you do about it?
Well, let's talk about your arrival and what your impressions of New Guinea were.
Well, the first of all was that when we arrived there, they dropped the rope nets over the side of the boat, and we scrambled down onto barges, and apparently on the barge that I was on, apparently they'd taken the shields off the back of the barge, and when she hit the beach, a swell come on and bloody near washed everybody out the front of the barge. It stuck there. There's some really hilarious moments with the coming down those rope nets on the side of the boat, and there's about a 5-6 foot swell going. So 1 minute your feet were, it looked like being on the deck, the minute you'd be 6 foot off the ground, you know. So they had fellas down below, two or three to each man, as they loaded up the barges, they'd pull you off the net so that you didn't break a leg or something on the way down, you know. Hilarious bloody times. Even the dog come aboard in a haversack, came down with us, the dog we'd brought back from the Middle East. Every time we got to the beach, we were already wringing wet, and so was all our gear, you know. Because there were lots of Yanks there then. They were their barges. And it took bloody near 3 months to get the whole division onto the... Because when the Yanks took off, they took off with all their barges and everything, and we didn't have the lighters and that sort of thing, and the division trickled in over a 3 month period before it was all really assembled there. Yeah,
funny. Well, I'm interested in that. You talk of the Americans, and people talk of the idea of the Americans doing cartwheels and leaving pockets to basically wither on the vine.
Yeah, that's right.
And given the fact that the Japanese were cut off, how did you feel about going in to do this job that literally they could be left there?
Yeah, well, it was a different situation in the Wewak Danmap area, because there were a lot more Japanese there than there were in other these other pockets. You know, there were very large numbers of men and still well organised, fully capable of, if they weren't harassed or contained, of doing damage elsewhere. You know, there was still an army there. And I think that's the reason why they weren't just left to do their own thing. They had to be contained or eliminated, one of the two, and that's the reason why we stayed there. You know, other than that, they could have... I think that if there hadn't have been so many of them and they weren't so well organised, that maybe they would have just left them there. But,
what were your impressions of New Guinea initially?
The bugger of a place.
Why?
Oh, it's nothing. I mean, there's jungle. It's pretty. It's a pretty place, mind you. So everything that's green and coral isle, the coral beaches and miles of fish, but the jungle itself. Once you walk in, 1 minute you're in the open, the next minute you're in completely enclosed. You know. Once you walk into that jungle, it's the sameness about it all the way through, except when you get into the hilly parts of it, and then it's bloody murder.
What was your initial camp like?
We were camped beside a muddy river that we didn't stay there too long, because when they picked the river, they must have been blind, because it was all swampy marsh around the muddy thing. Obvious that when the river come down, it would have flooded. So we got out of there pretty quick, and we moved on to higher ground. Very steamy and wet, and of course the old mosquitoes were the biggest trouble. We started on those routine Atabrin supplements, and they had to be supervised by officers or sergeants. You had to have a pannikin of water and your tongue out, and you didn't put it on your tongue. The authorities put the tablet on your tongue, and you swallowed and took a drink of water and stuck your tongue out again, and they looked in the cup to see you hadn't spat it in the cup. And then they were talking about that if you got the malaria, it would be the chief medical officer, brigadier somebody, or general somebody, talking about being charged with self-inflicted wounds if you got malaria. And bugger me, who comes down with malaria? He did. It wasn't effective in all. I got malaria, both benign and malignant. Tertian was. I was in New Guinea, and I didn't miss one Atabrin at any time. You know, if I was in a situation where it couldn't be given to me, I always took it myself. And then they had all these other things. They had Betty that you rubbed on you, and Mary that you rubbed on you. Well, Mary was for mosquitoes, and Betty was for scrub typhus. And your clothes got that way. They were bloody saturated in oil sometimes. It's good to get down the beach and get into the water once in a while.
What have you heard of the situation at that time on your arrival, and what your job would be?
Well, we knew that the actual contact with the enemy by artillery fire would be more difficult than what would be under normal circumstances, because of the tightness of the cliffs and the areas where the Japanese had dug themselves in. You know, they had to be extremely accurate fire, and for the simple reason that you had to be careful of tree bursts and with your own infantry underneath them and that sort of thing. You know, there's very few clear areas where you could actually be no open sights, even by the forward observation officer. It was all done on all, most of it on artillery board, you know, and it's apparently that as far as you hear the history of some of the infantry regiments, that it was extremely successful, the artillery fire in the New Guinea mountains. They were very pleased we were there, apparently. But still a bugger of a place.
Had you understood what had gone before? What actions had been taking place prior to your arrival?
Well, we took straight over from the Yanks. You could see that because their method is to blow everything down, and they did. You know, they could see the areas where they'd used gunfire on, and it was just a tangled mass of jungle that nobody could get in and nobody could get out, sort of thing. But I think they must have had some pretty solid skirmishes, the Yanks, because I remember one section there was on the Drinamore River, I think it was, that the flood came down, and apparently all the Japs had done was just buried their dead in the sand in the bottom of the dry river, and when the flood came down it washed them all out, and by Jesus there was a lot of bloody half-rotten skeletons around the place, you know, and then he just washed them all out of the sand. And so they must have had some fairly solid engagements, the Americans, while they were there.
So how were you what was your role in New Guinea, and how were you to take over from the Americans?
Well, they had had a front, and I think with the Americans, they knew that they weren't going to stop there, so they got to so far, and then they even restricted their patrols. You know, they weren't, when our fellas came in, sometimes they had quite some considerable distances to our patrols, quite considerable distances to go before they made contact with the enemy. Actually, the enemy had withdrawn, probably sensibly too, you know, and taken up, built good consolidated positions that they could defend. That was the effect of the Americans. And so when our fellows finally contacted them, most of the areas where they contacted the Japs were solidly dug in places, you know, reinforced with coconut logs and all this sort of thing. And they start the years shells with the cap on, instead of taking the cap off the fuse, so you leave the cap on, and then it used to penetrate through the dugouts and the logs and explode when it got inside. That was one cure for that heavy emplacements. It was a very, very good move when they used this cap on ammunition. But you'd pound them out of one place and they just go not very far away onto the next crest, you know, and it was uphill and down dale, and they weren't very far away, but it was just a crest by crest. It was the infantry, the bloody dreadful conditions for the infantry to fight under.
Well, let's talk about your experience and your duties in your first experience of operations against the Japanese.
Well, it was just on the Drinamore River was when we first went into action. It's
Well, let's talk about that. What did that involve for you?
Well, just a matter of taking out gun positions, waiting for fire orders, and the observation officers went forward with the infantry, and the infantry asked for fire to be brought down on certain areas, and And then there was a couple of rogue guns up there that they had a lot of trouble with, and apparently they were dug into the side of the reverse side of the hill, and they used to roll them out on rails, fire the guns and then go back in again. So eventually they trapped them with the guns out and knocked the guns over that way, you know, and the prisoners they got said that in that action there were quite a lot of Japanese killed in that area where the guns were emplacements were.
Yeah. You were mentioning, obviously, your experience of being a gunner in different places like North Africa, Greece. How did the operation of and the firing of guns alter when you were firing it in jungle situations?
You know, the actual operation of the gun firing is no difference whatsoever. It's only the difference in range and elevation that the forward observation officer gives you. You know, they fire to a plan and a pattern, and the gun layer is the man that lays the gun. He's the most important fellow. They sing out the orders, and he lays the gun and brings it. It's on a line and elevation, and he brings the gun up and down and up and down and back onto its right angle of elevation, and then of course in the 25 pounder the checks on the charges. Then they might want a high charge or a low charge depending on how far they got to go or how much elevation they want. But as far as the operation of the piece of the gun is concerned, it's no different. Doesn't matter where you are. The only thing, in some places it's harder to dig in. Or the best thing about the 25 pounder is that it went onto a round steel platform that could be spun around 360 degrees. You know.
We're talking at the moment of October of 44, I understand. Would that be about right?
Oh, yeah. They couldn't nail it down there.
You mentioning the Australian 7th Division and the 6th Division, and you wanted to correct something.
Yeah, well, there was no 7th Division there. That was the 6th Division there. The whole Ida B. WEWAC operation was all 6th Division. What's he talk about? Rocky Point and Dan Mab and the Drunamore and...
We were talking about the Drunamore River and Babyang.
Babyang, yeah.
In October of 1944.
Yeah, and a
Torricelli
Rangers, yeah. Yeah, well, that was all 6th Division. That was the 16th, 17th and 19th Brigades. And I think the... Second machine gun battalion.
How did working in the jungle situations make your job harder?
Yeah, well, the line of fire for a start, you know, they had to work out where they, and sometimes they had to cut trees down to get a line of fire, you know, to get through over the hills or over the ranges, and muddy conditions to dig the guns in. And sometimes they sandbagged them up rather than, of course, in lots of places there, especially on the coastal plain, you only had to go down a couple of feet and you've got water, you know, it's sloppy black mud.
What of morale, given this situation?
In New Guinea, once we got up there, it was the greatest thing that could have happened because everybody had a job and everybody had a job to do and they were all pleased to do it and it was busy, busy all the time. There was no time to lay about. It was all, that's what the soldier needs is action. He goes stale pretty quick when he's just laying around doing nothing, but when he's got his job to do and he's doing it all the time. And in New Guinea, they used to call it coming back for a spell, but it was more or less just come back to refurbish and then you'd be in action again, which everybody appreciated, you know. Yeah.